Welcome to Asphalt Talk, a podcast by and for asphalt professionals. Join our expert hosts as they tackle real industry issues to pave a smoother way for asphalt suppliers and producers. This podcast is sponsored by MAPA, the Missouri Asphalt Pavement Association. Founded to promote quality and accountability, MAPA has been serving the asphalt producers of Missouri since 1990. And now a public service announcement from our sponsor, MayCreate Design. Google Translate doesn't work for web designer to paving company translations. You say hot mix and it thinks you're talking about the latest snack craze. Wouldn't it be nice to work with a designer who knows the difference between binders and bitumen? Work with folks who have been speaking your language for the past 17 years. Visit maycreate.com. That's M-A-Y-E-create.com. Because if you think your website sucks, so does everyone else.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Asphalt Talk. I'm your host, Dale Williams, with the Missouri Asphalt Pavement Association. Today, we're sitting down with Lance Taylor, Transportation Planning Director at the Missouri Department of Transportation. Lance, it's great to talk with you today, and I look forward to our discussion about the Statewide Transportation Improvement Program, or STIP. But before we do, let's spend a little time learning about yourself. So, Lance, how long have you been with MoDOT?
Well, Dale, I started in May of 1996. I started as a materials inspector in Central District, which was District 5 at the time.
Well, I guess you started. So I started in June of 96 in the old, what I'd call the District 2 Macon. So you and I pretty much started there at the same time.
Yeah, I was May 28th. I had to slip in there, you know, just one day, I think.
You wanted to get in for a holiday? Was that the goal?
Yeah. Trying.
Did you always want to work in road construction industry?
To be honest, I was encouraged to put an app with MoDOT. I don't know that I could tell you a thing about the industry before that. And I happened to be to get on with transportation planning actually for the summer. And I had a great summer, had great folks that I worked with, a guy named Keith Hassler hired me because I was a local kid from around where he was from. And but that really kind of opened the door to me. I found a place where I felt like we could have I could have a great career and be able to serve the people of Missouri. And it really just opened up that door. And that's where I looked when I graduated.
Who has been the most important professional mentor during your career?
That's tough. I've been really fortunate to have a lot of people throughout my career give me advice, to take the time and energy to try to help guide me through. But I guess what I would say is we had a right-of-way director, Kelly Lucas. She was kind of a no-nonsense lady that was really focused and stuck to business. And one day when I was in design, she pulled me aside and she was just, you know, kind of talking to me about that she sees that I'm really good at making connections and building relationships, and that's a really critical thing for leadership, to be able to move through contentious issues and challenges. And she really encouraged me that not to look at that as a hindrance or a challenge to get by, but that it was really a strength for me, and that it really shaped my view on leadership and what my role would be is if I moved up within the organization. And so it may have been just a little thing, may have been something that she, you know, was trying to be nice. It really did impact me and helped me understand that there was a place in this organization for me.
I think, Lance, that's really great advice. I mean, I think, you know, like on the association side, relationships and communication are an essential part of what we do. And I think that was probably a great piece of advice for a young engineer coming in to the DOT, and fortunate to have had a mentor like that. You mentioned her, Keith. Those are names I haven't thought about in quite a while, but I do remember those my days there. So what do you like to do when you're not at work? What are your hobbies?
Well, I have two, my wife and I have two kids. One's a freshman at Missouri S&T, one's a freshman in high school. Both of them are driving. So I spend a lot of time just like looking for car insurance. No, we travel a lot. We, both abroad and throughout the U.S. We really do enjoy that. Golf is probably my absolute favorite hobby. I've been playing it since I was a teen. You wouldn't tell that by seeing me play. It looks like I may have started yesterday, but I really do love
Where's favorite place you visited abroad?
it. Well, Japan was really nice. I enjoyed Japan. But Croatia, is something to see. I'll say that.
Wow, Lance, known you a long time. I didn't realize that you'd been to both of those places. So that those are sound like interesting places to go. What's the most important lesson you've learned over your career?
I think just because I had a little early success in the department, and I moved up, and I got probably a little full of myself. But learning that I couldn't do it all on my own, that I needed a good team around me, I needed to rely on people, I needed to look to the resources that were around me to help me know what I need, the things that I didn't see, to help me, to grow and develop to be better. I came into a role in design where I really didn't know design and the things they did, but the team around me really helped me to figure it out and helped support me. And that made an impact on me and made me realize how important not just what I'm doing is, but that helping others be successful is really important as well.
So if you could go back and give your 18-year-old self one piece of advice, what would it be?
I think I would tell myself to slow down. I 30 years here has just been gone in a blink of an eye, really. It may not have felt like that on the way through, but boy, I wish I would have spent more time with the people that I worked with along the way, really just connected with them more, took more time to understand them. The people in our lives in the moment aren't always going to be there. They move on to different roles, different jobs, and just enjoying being connected with those folks. I think that's what I would tell myself. But 18-year-old me probably wasn't going to listen to an old man anyway, so.
Yeah, it, you know, I was filling out my bio to speak here a year or so ago, and it's like I've been doing this for 28, 29 years, and I'm like, when did that happen? Now we're the old guys in the room we used to make fun of,
Right.
and
Yep.
hear those young whippersnappers, as they would say.
Yep.
So let's switch gears and talk about the STIP. So for those who may not be as familiar, the STIP outlines project MoDOT plans to deliver over the next 5 years. So, at a high level, Lance, what is the STIP and why is it important?
Well, the STIP's a 5-year plan for the construction of highway and bridges and other modes here, in the transportation system. It's the projects that have been identified, working with our partners, and lifted up to be delivered. It also operates as the mechanism in which we reach out to the public for them to provide input to us on how they see that work and whether it's critical to them. The STIP is a commitment. It's, people wait to see the projects that they want into the STIP for a long time, and once it makes it there, the commission really impresses on us that that's a commitment, and we really need to deliver that project. So, I look at it as a real roadmap of what work we're going to do over the next 5 years.
Can you walk us through how a project makes its way into the STIP?
Sure. Keep in mind that we've got 7 districts, and 2 of them have urban-rural splits, so in practice, there's about 9 different variations of how this works. But they all share the same core principles. They all work within the Missouri's planning framework, our approach to bottom-up decision making that helps to ensure that there's local voices in the room when priorities are raised. So typically what happens is that there's a need identified, a community member, a stakeholder. They have a challenge or a concern or sometimes an opportunity to improve the system, to improve the community. And they share those needs with their local representatives that work with our active transportation committees at both the regional planning commissions, the metropolitan planning organizations. We call those the TACs. Those are the folks that vet through all the needs in the area, all those things that are lifted up. The TAC considers them and then identifies which ones are most important to each region. Each region around the state does that, and then they bring those priorities up into prioritization meetings with MoDOT, where we then work together to just to figure out what's most critical, what has the most support, what's going to be the most impactful to be able to deliver. And then MoDOT takes those prioritized list, and we kind of build a little bit of information about them, get some programming estimates, and then figure out where within the 5-year window those projects will fit.
So how do the districts prioritize projects? I mean, does condition or safety play a role in how they prioritize them?
The districts, they are the ones that work directly with our planning partners. So they're the ones that have these difficult conversations about all the needs around the state. And of course, safety and condition of our infrastructure, it plays a big role in that. As those needs are brought up at the TACs, MoDOT will bring the crash history, fatalities and disabling injuries. Will bring the condition of the assets that are in those areas, and then the other information about the area and future plans, and talk about what the potential impacts are, what can be done. Ultimately, estimate out a few of those solutions, and then figure out what the solution to that issue is. So the safety data, the condition data really are important not only in driving which projects or which needs, I'm sorry, are delivered, but also the timing of those. We really strive to keep good condition assets in good condition. So if there's a solution on the horizon for, say, an asset management treatment, we want to keep that in on time and on schedule, because we start to lose some of the value of that fix if we drop out of that good condition.
How do funding sources impact ultimately what gets programmed?
So to some extent, the federal funding sources really do impact things. The federal program funds have different requirements to be used. And so the projects that those funds are used on have to be eligible. It all has to kind of align. And whether they're focused on safety or maintenance or capacity, they have to meet the criteria for those categories of funds. But MoDOT really works to be as flexible as we can be. So if a project comes through and it's going to use some flexible funds that are programmed on it up front, and it turns out there's an element where we can use some more of the prescriptive funds, the more difficult to use funds, we will switch that behind the scenes to try to always have the most flexible funds available to do the remaining work. Ultimately, safety money goes to safety projects. But some of the other funds have enough latitude that we can be good about making sure that we use every dollar.
What are the biggest challenges you face when building the STIP?
We started this process a few years ago that developed the high priority unfunded needs list. And it lays out over $10 billion worth of road and bridge projects or needs across the state. And I really think the biggest challenge is figuring out for the money that's available to try to address some of these projects or these needs, what's going to move forward. Those are difficult decisions by the districts out working with their partners. And there are folks in the state that have waited years to see their need addressed. And those are difficult discussions to have as they go through the selection process. So we've got this $10 billion of needs list, and for the most part we move a few $100 million worth of needs around the state off of that list once we address asset management needs, once we address safety needs. And so it really is just trying to figure out how to best use those available dollars.
So how do changes like cost increase or unexpected needs impact the program once it's set?
Oh, it can be very impactful. As designs develop, our project managers are really trying to control those costs and try to operate within budget. But it can be difficult. There are things that are outside their control that can pop up, and it just a lot of those just take money to solve. And then there's a project can take a couple of years to develop, and there may be new needs that are identified on that. And so if you're already working there, there's a pressure to do those additional items while you're there. And so all of those things combined to basically just take available funding away from other uses, right? So if a current project runs over and it is awarded well over program, then the money is taken away in the next year. So there's just less funds for the projects that are coming in the future. And if a project over 2 or 3 years of design increases a bunch, they've got to make room for that large cost of that commitment, and it just takes money away from other needs.
From an industry perspective, predictability matters. What's the best way for contractors to understand what work is coming?
Well, for a kind of a quick high-level overview, I think that the Excel file that we publish on our external website called I think it's called the Road and Bridge Program raw data. It's kind of that skinny STIP, but it's an Excel file of it. So you can sort it by program year. You can sort it by lane miles. It has the project description. It has the current construction estimate out there, and it'll give you a sense of resurfacings. So many miles, so much cost, and gives you a feel for the volume of work that's coming ahead. But we're also, with our focus on customer service, we really are trying to improve the information that we provide to our customers, to our partners, to those that support our projects, so that they have the right information. So this is something that we're actively looking into, trying to figure out how we can best communicate and keep people aware of what's coming. And no commitment, but we are really working, and hopefully you'll see some improvements to that in the near future.
That's great. 'Cause I know our folks do look at the STIP and as they're trying to build out future cost and, having equipment and people and everything for that. So as we start to wrap up, what's the biggest challenge you see for the STIP moving forward?
Oh, I'd say to me, the clear challenge that we face is that we've passed the peak funding point, that the funding structure doesn't keep pace with inflation. And so even though we are at a pretty good level on contractor awards, that dollar figure is going to lose buying power over time. And it's one of those things where there's never enough money, but then inflation is going to take even more of that away. I think that's the biggest long-term need that I see.
Yeah, I definitely agree with you. And we were hopeful maybe we might see a new highway bill come out of this Congress, but here we're sitting as we record this in the middle of April, and nothing's passed out. And as you're aware, Congressman Graves, who's the chair of T&I, has announced he's stepping down after this term. So still hopeful that the congressman will get something across the finish line, but the clock is ticking with it being election year and midterms, and I guess we'll see what happens. So, any parting thoughts?
I would just say, I really do appreciate our partnership with all of the industries that are out there helping us to deliver these important projects. I think that our focus has always been from both of us on just delivering good projects, delivering improvements for the people of Missouri. And I just thank you all for that. I think the industry folks, and I think there's an opportunity as we move forward. We just keep working together, and we'll solve some of these problems. So.
Lance, it's been great catching up with you today. And I'd just like to say thank you for listening to Asphalt Talk, the podcast by and for asphalt professionals. If you enjoyed listening and learned something, please leave us a review. Your review will help us connect with other professionals like yourself so you can keep the conversation going.
1992 called, they want their website back. Stop apologizing for your crappy site and stop working with that company who thinks hot mix is the latest snack craze. Work with folks who have been speaking your language for the past 17 years. And get a website that's not a gigantic pain in the you-know-what to build. Visit maycreate.com, that's maycreate.com, for a free consultation and quote. Because if you think your website sucks, so does everyone else.